Before we begin today, I'm going to say the set-aside prayer. God, set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, the big book, recovery, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially let go of my old ideas so I can experience new truth, your truth. God, help me carry your message today. Amen. Okay, today we are finishing the Two Wives. That's where we are on Saturday in the big book. For those who don't come that often, we cover the big book, three different meetings, three different parts of the big book, and we add all sorts of stuff to each time we go through the carry this message, the steps we took, drop the rock. For those interested in 6 and 7, we did drop the rock 6 or 7 meetings on Wednesday night, and it's all on the site. Today we're finishing Two Wives. I've seen a lot more when I look at it today. I always prepare for the meeting. It may not seem like it, but I do. And I could see things differently. I could see new things in here. When they talk about how the person reacts to the alcoholic, sometimes you'll see that they need to focus on themselves and what they need to do. And they're just the way it's written. And I hope it's been helpful. It certainly helped me. We're on page 116. And they're talking at the top of the first paragraph about fear. Anybody ever have paralyzing fear? Now, the paralyzing fear they're talking about is the one who's in the relationship that you're afraid his husband will lose his position. Anybody here afraid they're going to lose their own position? And they think of the disgrace and hard times which befall if this happens. Now remember, this book was written, women did not commonly work. They were very dependent on the man for income. This was 1938. It was a different world. There weren't a lot of jobs. The country was poor, coming out of the recession. You cannot imagine what it was like in America. I can't imagine in those days. This was before the war, and then we kind of got out of it through mobilizing our economy. Should it happen again, regard it a different light. Now, here's what I found powerful. You're afraid of something happen. But if it happens, look at it in a different light. Isn't that what we talk about all the time in here? See things differently. You know, when my son died, I thought that was a really horrible thing. It was. But I was able to see it with God's eyes in a different light. Maybe it will prove a blessing. Remember, we talk about God disciplines us. There's a lot of scripture on troubles, perseverance, builds character. In the big book, it talks about God disciplines us and changes us. And that's how we get closer to God, right? And I talked about trusting God on Wednesday. Remember, faith in AA is trust. And how do you learn to trust God when he helps you handle things that you couldn't handle yourself? Before, positively, we handled it, but not in a good way. Maybe it will prove a blessing. So if this calamity that she's worried about, maybe it will convince him to quit drinking. What does it take? I was watching the ball game from last night on this morning, and they showed that the guy is going to alcoholic treatment because he had a bad incident on December 13th and he wants to change his life. Sometimes that's what it takes, right? We all didn't come here because we had a good day, right? Something happened. Something happened that made us realize we couldn't go on anymore. And if that hasn't happened to you, if you continue, God will let it happen. You'll see the grace of God. You'll see your powerlessness, your hopelessness. So it says, it may convince him to stop. And now you know that he can stop if he will. How did they know? How do you know you can stop? Because that people in AA have done it. And people have used the power of this book. I was talking to someone who's new. I said, well, you don't have any power to quit drinking. Why would you come to AA? Because AA has a way to find the power. Mm-hmm. And this book is the path to God, right? It's the treasure map to God. The book isn't a treasure. It's a treasure map to a relationship with God, and the relationship with God gives you a power to live. So time after time, this apparent calamity, and apparent calamity, it's not really a calamity, has been a boon to us. Why? Because it opens up a path which led to the discovery of God. And the path is blocked until you can see that you have to change. And some calamity brings you here, and it opens up your mind to the truth of your situation. And then it leads to the path of discovery of God. So I thought this was a really powerful paragraph. Remember on fear, on page 68, it says we have to, fear is because of relying on self. Anybody agree with that? So we have to rely on God. Anybody think that's a good idea? Trust and rely on God. And it says if we let him demonstrate through us what he can do, and we humbly rely on him, we can handle calamity with serenity. Is that a great promise? It's true for me. So I can handle anything today. It doesn't mean I'm going to like it, or it's not going to have cause me pain, but I can handle it in a positive way with God. We have elsewhere remarked how much better life is when lived on a spiritual plane. Anybody agree with that? Well, how is your life working if you're not on a spiritual plane? Somebody was telling me their husband is an alcoholic and doesn't want to believe in God for some reason. I said, well, ask him how his life's working. How's it going? And when you realize it's not going well, you might want to change your mind. That's what the whole chapter to the agnostics is, change your mind. You need a power. You have no power to live. Change your mind. Change your mind about your creator, whoever created you. And AA says, don't worry about what it is or how it is or who it is yet. Just do the work and God will reveal himself to you. And that is a promise that's absolutely true. God, if God can solve the old age riddle of alcoholism, he can solve your problems too. Now, what is my number one problem? I only have one problem. I'm separated from God. I can live at any time during the day in a world that I created where I'm the center of the universe. And we like it for a while, and then we start getting angry or irritated or judgmental or impatient, and then we say, you know, I have to get back in the world with God. So we have conscious separation is my only problem from God, and conscious contact with God is the solution. And in the beginning, the steps are how I develop conscious contact, steps 1 through 9, and steps 10, 11 is how I keep that every day and maintain that. We wise found that, like everybody else, we were afflicted with pride. Isn't that something? We're all afflicted with pride, self-pity, vanity, and all the things which go to make up the self-centered person. I'm sorry, but alcoholics do not have, we're not the only self-centered people in the world. And we like to think we are the extreme self-will because, you know, we have to be the best at everything. But the rest of the world's all self-centered too. Just turn on the news. And the whole world would be better if we all practiced these spiritual principles, wouldn't it? And isn't really that's what's being said in the New Testament, love your neighbors yourself. I mean, isn't that as you wish others to do to you, do to them? And so we're all afflicted with pride, self-pity, vanity, but we have a solution to that. And it says we were not above selfishness or dishonesty. As our husbands began to apply spiritual principles in our lives, we began to see the desirability of doing so too. And I resolved, it's a design for living that works for all and under all circumstances. It says that somewhere in the book. And so we're all self-centered, and we all have a solution to be God-centered. The problem I had is that I could want that, but I didn't know how to do that. So this program, the 12 Steps, has given me tools so that I can do that. Now, the riddle of my existence is why I don't do it all the time, why I wait a little bit. you know. And so I don't enjoy myself centeredness as much as I used to. Anybody used to enjoy it a lot? Oh, we just loved it. Self-pity. I love the self-pity song. I had several hit songs. But, you know, now when I hear it in my people I'm working with, I just go, oh, yeah, your life is so terrible. Let's sing the song together. And, you know, when you actually look at it, it's so silly. You know, when you look at what you have, people are in self-pity. I said, well, do you have pancreas cancer? No. You have two legs, don't you? You know, you can see, you can speak, you've got your mind. You see, we forget all that when we get in self-pity. You want to feel sad, watch those ESPN commercials on the cancer where they show the people. You know, they show the kids, they show the people who are really sick. And, you know, it's hard for me because I did that my whole life. And that's what was my profession. It was very hard to do, to go in there and watch people who you really cared about get sick and progress, but it would make you feel so grateful for just the few things you had. And if I ever got into self-pity, I would feel so silly, you know, when I would see how people are handling situations. And the ones who handled it the best were the ones who had God. I mean, there was no doubt. The ones that had God, they said, doctor, it'll be okay. I understand. The ones that didn't had 50 handouts. They're running all over the country trying to find the answer. And so there's a peace that comes with your relationship with God. I don't know, I got off there, but I hope that was made sense. At first, some of us did not believe we needed this help. Isn't that true for all of us? No, I don't need all of this help. We thought on the whole we were pretty good people. Right? We're all pretty good. Like, a lot of people think when they die, they're going to go to God and say, well, I was pretty good. You know, I was pretty good, and that's going to help. I'm not saying that isn't true, but that's how we must live our lives. Capable of being nicer if our husband stopped drinking. See, so they're being good depended on their husband stopping drinking. Isn't that something? So we're dependent on something other than God. You see how they get people get sick, too. What do we put ahead of God, right? It was a silly idea that we were too good to need God. We all need God. That's why I really like this chapter. It's really powerful. Now we try to put spiritual principles to work in every department of our lives. Notice every. Why do they say every department of our lives? If you're not putting the spiritual principles to work in one part of your life, what happens? For me, I get afraid, or I get upset. So I have to give it all to God all the time. And I know when I'm not giving an area to God because I'm managing that or afraid of that or something. And so I have to stop. And when we do that, we find it solves our problems too. And what are our problems are of our own making. Anybody remember that? They arise out of ourselves, and we're self-will run riot. And what is our basic trouble? Our trouble is our selfishness, self-centeredness, the root of my trouble. And then I made decisions based on self, which caused me to be hurt, right? And then my troubles were of my own making. They arise out of me. So AA doesn't allow you to be a victim anymore. It makes us responsible for our situation. So the problem is me, S-H-I-T, simply how I think. I told my wife that, she agreed with me. But it's true, simply how I think and how I see things. And then it says, the ensuing lack of fear, worry, and hurt feelings is a wonderful thing. Isn't that a great promise? If you have the spiritual principles working, then you don't have fear, worry, and hurt feelings. Why did I get hurt feelings? Because I thought somebody didn't think I was good enough for criticizing me, and then I was dependent on them for how I felt, and you know, that was a sick way to live, and I lived that my whole life. And now I can say, well, you know, maybe it's not that important. God loves me. They are who they are. And half the times I would have hurt feelings over things that I didn't even know were true. Anybody else do that? They gave me the look, or they didn't like me or something, and they never told me that. I think is Corey here today? Corey did a great synopsis last Wednesday of alcoholic thinking, and it really helped me. Maybe he'll do that today too. how we see somebody, we decide how they are and they don't like us, and then, you know, blah, 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 blah. We urge you to try our program. So their program was the same as our program. It's just one program. And notice, you're not in the program. Have you heard people say, I'm in the program? You're in the fellowship. You do the program. You can't be in it. You can't be in the steps. You're either doing them or you're not. And so people forget that. You can come to the fellowship and be in the fellowship, but if you're not doing the program, you just have the fellowship, which is fine, but it's not the solution. Remember, the fellowship binds us together, but it's not the cement that holds us. What holds us together? This common solution, the program of action. Nothing can be so helpful to your husband as the radically changed attitude towards him which God will show you how to have. And I wrote, nothing can be so helpful to me as the radically changed attitude towards whomever which God will show me how to have. My change in attitude, which is really talked about on page 66-67, is how we get free of anger. It says, do you want to be free of anger? Anybody here want to be free of anger? Well, good. We have four paragraphs that tell us what they did, what was their course. And you know what they did? They changed their attitude. They looked on everybody as perhaps spiritually ill, just like ourselves. We ask God for love, patience, and tolerance towards whoever is bothering us. Now, that's a change in attitude, right? We ask, how can I be helpful to them instead of wanting to execute them? And then you say, God, save me from being angry, change in attitude, and how can I have a kind and tolerant view of them? So if I change my attitude towards someone with God's help, then I can't be angry at them. And I can't give them power over me, remember? I can't have God as my higher power and give power to other people by being bothered by them. It says, if you and your husband find a solution for the pressing problem of drink, you are, of course, going to be very happy. But all problems will not be solved at once. Why? Because we constantly separate from God, right? Mm-hmm. And we have to constantly get back to God. We have to watch for what? Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear all day long. When these crop up, we have to ask God to remove them. Well, why do they crop up in the first place? Because that's our nature. And we watch with God to see it before it gets blown up, crop up, we ask God to remove them. So we have to watch all the time. But seed has started to sprout in the new soil. I love that. Because the roots of our troubles was self-centeredness. So we had the root in the wrong soil. So if I put myself in God's soil, then my life changes. Remember the tree you have when you come in here? Your life is a tree when you come in here. It's ugly. It's dying. All the leaves are rotten. It's full of disease. It looks terrible. Because it's in your soil. And the bark of that tree is all your character defects. And then all the branches are your resentment, your fear, and your shame and guilt. So AA says, okay, that tree didn't work. Let's try a different tree. Do the steps. Plant your tree in a new soil. Tell us what it looks like. And the bark of the tree is love and tolerance. And the branches are beautiful, the fruits of your labors. So you're putting in a new soil, but growth has only begun. Remember, it's a constant program. You have a daily reprieve. You have to keep doing the work to get in fit spiritual condition. There will be many ups and downs. Anybody agree with that? Mm-hmm. Sure, life is fun, but how you handle the ups and downs is different. See, it says you will live in a new and wonderful world no matter the circumstances on page 100. If you follow the dictates of your higher power, you live in a new and wonderful world no matter what's happening. Now, what that tells you is that you're in a world with God, if you're following God, that it doesn't matter in the circumstances, you don't have to be bothered. You can be okay. It doesn't mean you like them or they're not going to be difficult, but you can be okay. Anybody agree with that? It's true. That's a great promise. Many of the old problems will still be with you. This is it should be. You're not rid of self. You get a daily reprieve. And someday, somebody was saying, we take baby steps. One day we're good at dealing with our dishonesty, and the next day we have to work on our fear, and they come and go because that's the way we're made. The faith and sincerity of both you and your husband will be put to the test. See, the faith and sincerity is going to be put to the test. I wrote minute by minute. And it's a workout, the workouts of how you react to situations and how you seek God constantly is going to be part of your education. For thus you learn to live. We have to learn how to live a different way, right? It's a process. And you will make mistakes. We all make mistakes. And where are the mistakes? Not just in my actions, but in my thinking. Starts in my thinking. I don't like something, or they're not doing it the way I want, or blah, 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 and I'm afraid they're going to take it. And then I take actions. But you will make mistakes, but if you are earnest, they will not drag you down. Instead, you will capitalize on them. Doesn't it say that each night we're supposed to review our day? Where were we selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or afraid, or inconsiderate? Were we kind and loving to all? What could we have done better? Right? Were we trying to pack things into a stream of life? Or were we thinking of ourselves? And then it says we ask God's forgiveness and corrective action. So every night we have to review how we were with God during the day so he can help us the next day to do better. And that's how we learn to live. A better way of life will emerge when they are overcome. And remember it says on page 84, we entered the world of the Spirit, and our goal is to grow in understanding and effectiveness in this world. It's a growth, it's a process. We don't get perfect. You watch any of us or talk to any of each other, we know we're not perfect, but we're growing. Some of the snags you will encounter are irritation. Anybody get irritated? Hurt feelings or resentment. So the snags are wrong thinking. You're seeing it wrong. Your husband will sometimes be unreasonable. Anybody live with someone who's unreasonable? Oh, I'm the only one. Sorry, honey. She won't listen. She's not unreasonable. Here's the problem. I decide she's unreasonable. She's just who she is. So if I decide she's unreasonable, who told me to do that? It wasn't God. God didn't say, Michael, Patty's unreasonable. I just decided, and then when I see her as unreasonable, I don't like the way I see her. And isn't that what he's talking about in the acceptance chapter? When he saw his wife through different lenses, she started getting better. But she didn't change at all. He just changed the way he saw her. And that's a blessing, when I can change the way I see somebody so I don't have to see them and as a reasonable, I don't have to react to them. You will want to criticize if you see it. So I love this. Starting from a speck on the domestic horizon, great thunderclouds of dispute may gather. Anybody live like that? A speck on the domestic horizon. So we make a speck into a thundercloud. And that's what we do. Remember, we pole vault over mouse turds? Remember? Alcoholics? You know, somebody just cuts us off, and before you know it, we're plotting their execution. And then it goes from there to all the people who have been unfair to me, and then you're singing the self-pity song and all that stuff. These family dissensions are very dangerous. Of course they are, especially to your husband. But I disagree. They're dangerous to you, to everyone. Because remember, what you bring into the situation is what you get. If you're bringing love in this situation, you get it back. If both people are bringing love and tolerance, then they're going to react differently. If one's bringing hate and the other's bringing love, the one who's bringing love doesn't have to react. And so, what's that expression? It takes two to tangle. Often you must carry the burden of avoiding them or keeping them under control. Well, I don't agree with that. I think you have to keep yourself under control. Because I can't keep someone under control. I have no power over them. So that's why I said I'm seeing this differently. The suggestions are all applied to all of us all the time. Never forget that resentment is a deadly hazard to an alcoholic, but it's a hazard to everyone. Resentment blocks you from God. You can't have the love of God and anger in your heart. We do not mean that you have to agree with your husband whenever there is an honest difference of opinion. It's true, but here's a great line that I've never heard read before. Just be careful not to disagree in a resentment or critical spirit. And I was studying scripture the other day, and they were talking about the critical spirit. And the critical spirit is the spirit where you can't hear God's word. That people didn't recognize Jesus because their spirit was critical. And so if I have a critical spirit, I can't see God working in my life. And it's my critical spirit that's not, I can't hear God when I'm a critical spirit. And I'm critical because I'm judging things and I'm in self. So you can have a difference of opinion, but you can't disagree in a resentful or critical spirit. Now, if you want to see how that works out, look at our government. Both sides, all of them, it's constant disagreement and a critical spirit. There's no harmony. There's no love of fellow man there. And so my problem is my critical spirit. And so I have my spirit with God is not critical, it's loving, right? So who gives me a critical spirit? I do. And I don't want to do that anymore. It says, you and your husband will find that you can dispose of serious problems easier than you can trivial ones. Well, I wrote, everything I see as a problem is serious. Did anybody think any of your problems aren't serious? We could take what someone would consider a trivial problem and sit in our chair and create a whole scenario of doom and gloom from it. Mm-hmm. Within milliseconds. If you're a good alcoholic, you can create gloom and doom, you know, like that. Next time you have a heated discussion, no matter what the subject, it should be the privilege, I love this, of either to smile and say, this is serious. I'm sorry I got disturbed. Let's talk about it later. Let's practice that in this room. This is getting serious. I'm sorry I'm getting disturbed. Let's talk about it later at an AA business meeting. If your husband is, but you know, this is a good thing. It's getting serious. I'm sorry I got disturbed. You're making amends. Let's talk about it later. And isn't that like pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action? See, there's so much in these pages. That's why they're called the spiritual principle pages. If your husband is trying to live on a spiritual basis, he will also be doing everything in his power to avoid disagreement or contention. So the problem is, if everybody's living on a spiritual basis, we should do everything to avoid disagreement or contention. And I wrote here, don't have a position. I heard that somebody says, the thing to do is not have a position on anything. Don't take a position. Because once I take a position, then I decide whether the other person's right or wrong or not. Your husband knows he owes you more than sobriety, he wants to make good, yet you must not expect too much. And I think this is something that is, we have to understand when we're sponsoring somebody, when we're working with somebody, when we're new in recovery, we have to be, his ways and thinking and doing are the habits of years. And listen, you can be sober a long time and still have habits of thinking that come back to you. So here it is, patience, tolerance, understanding, and love are the watchwords. Now I preach that all the time, LPTKCC, love, patience, tolerance, kindness, considerate, compassion. I preach it. Do I do it all the time? No, of course not. But I try to catch myself because I know when I'm not feeling good, I'm not doing LPTKCC. And when I'm doing LPTKCC, I don't have a critical spirit. And then I don't have a position. So what I have to do, unfortunately, is go from the critical spirit to the LPTKCC. And then it changes the way I see things. Those are our watchwords. I think we should talk about that more. How we be. Show him these things in yourself, and they will be reflected back to you from him. I can't believe it's in the big book. Because this guy said, what you bring in any situation is what you'll get. And it's right here in the book. Show people the things in yourself, and they will be reflected back to you from him. So if you're having a bad conversation, what did you bring into it? You see, what did you bring into it? And then you go, well, they don't understand, they're not reacting well. But I love that. Patience, tolerance, understanding, love are the watchwords. Show them these things in yourself. So I'm going to start quoting page 118. And they will be reflected back to you from him. Live and let live is the rule. Here's where live and let live is in the big book. It's the rule. Live and let live. Don't have a position. Let it go. Patience, tolerance, and understanding. If you both show a willingness to remedy your own defects, there will be little need to criticize each other. Isn't that something? Take responsibility. And then I wrote, how I be is what I get. Remember, it says, God, remove my fear and direct my attention to how I should be, not do. If I be love, patience, tolerance, kindness, considerate, compassion, my life will change. And if I'm not doing well, it's what am I being right then? We women carry us with us a picture of the ideal man. We'll get over that. The sort of chap we would like our husbands to be. It is the most natural thing in the world. Well, the picture of the ideal man is the picture you've created. So then if they don't live up to it, then they're no good. Once his liquor problem is solved, the feel he will now measure up to that cherished vision. I love it. Whose cherished vision is it? It's mine. So do I have a cherished vision of how somebody should measure up? And if they don't measure up to my vision and I'm in a critical spirit, then I'm going to get upset with him. The chances are he will not fool like yourself. He is just the beginning, the development. Be patient. And I wrote acceptance and change your vision. Accept people as they are. Another feeling we are very likely to entertain is one of resentment that love and loyalty could not cure our husbands of alcoholism. I think there's a lot of power in that. Resentment that love and loyalty cannot cure our husbands of alcoholism. We could have resentment to ourselves that we couldn't cure our own alcoholism. Why can't love and loyalty cure your husband of alcoholism? Because you have no power to change him. You have no power to fix him. Remember, we can't be dependent on things, people, places. We have to be dependent upon God. We can't fix them. But we can be loving and tolerant, right? We can change our attitude. We can be helpful. We can have a helpful spirit. We do not like the thought that the contents of a book or the work of another alcoholic has accomplished in a few weeks that for which we struggled for years. Well, that's self-centered thinking. Instead of being so happy that they found the book or they found something, you're upset that you couldn't do it. But that's self-centered thinking too. You see, so you're not grateful for the result. You feel bad that it wasn't you or they didn't listen to you. At such moments, we forget, and at those moments, alcoholism is an illness over which we cannot possibly have any power. That's why the one thing I understood when my son died is that he was powerless. And the thing that really helped me was that although it took me a while, I had no power to fix him or change him. My wife helped a lot. She said, we could have died in our bedroom upstairs. He could have died in our house. I felt bad that we wouldn't let him live with us. The other thing she said is that maybe it was his time. God decided that he was suffering long enough and just took him, so that he wouldn't have years of heartache and misery and hurt other people. We have no power over alcoholism and others, and the only power we have over it ourselves we get from God, and we get a daily reprieve based on our relationship with God. Your husband will be the first to say that your devotion and care, which brought him to the point where he could have spiritual experience, without you we have gone to pieces long ago. When resentful thoughts come, try to pause and count your blessings. I think I'm going to stop with that. When resentful thoughts come, try to pause and count your blessings. You can't be resentful and grateful. You can't be angry and with God. Count your blessings. Everybody in this room has blessings. We're all alive. And we have so many blessings, but all we can see is what we don't have or what they're not doing. Resentful thoughts come, pause and count your blessings. So I like these two pages. There's a lot in here. I'm going to stop there. I talked too long. I hope you'll forgive me. Remember, when resentful thoughts come, count your blessings. Don't have a critical spirit. Anyway, thank you.